Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the interview with Mrs. Ruth Kim Wong on March the 21st, 1983, and this is the second tape. Yeah, Mrs. Wong, what did you do after you get married?
I worked in Chinatown for Mr. Y.C. Hung. You know him?
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the first Chinese accepted in the bars.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I worked for him for several years, and I enjoyed that very much. I learned a lot from him.
Mm-hmm. What did you do?
I took care of his office. And,
secretary?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. He had such a small office, but did everything. I really liked it because I enjoyed meeting all the people that used to come in.
Mm-hmm. Where was his office?
Right in China on Alameda Street.
Alameda Street.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, was this the activities quite busy? And
yes, he had a large immigration. That was the basis of his work, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So would meet a lot of people that came from overseas, and anyone that would come in, well, we met them, and I learned a lot.
Uh-huh, I see. So basically, you take care of the his business, like
not just his office.
Office? Mm-hmm. Do you sort of type up some of the cases?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we would.
Well, what kind? Usually, it's the immigration cases, right?
Yes.
And can you sort of tell us what were the typical cases?
Well, I don't know what the typical cases were, but we did work in a lot of them, especially for people that either wanted to stay over or stay longer, or couldn't stay at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I really can't tell you much about his cases.
Uh-huh. Well, but he just ties it,
mm-hmm.
and mainly that people want to stay or extend their stay.
Mm-hmm. Extend their stay, mainly, and if they could stay longer.
Change their status.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Was any like special case that you remember that was very unusual? Or?
Well, one family came from the, I don't know where it came from, but somewhere in the Middle West or something, and the little boy was playing in, I guess near the border, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Where the border from the U.S. to Mexico, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some Chinese families lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that his father with a little boy that was playing in the ball that went across the border.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he went to get it, they kept the little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really, I didn't realize how bad it was that when you cross the border, you have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
And
so Mr. Hong would help him to
mm-hmm.
get back.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Can you talk about who is Mr. Hong and what he did and what kind of person he was?
Well, Mr. Hong is was a very kind gentleman, and I guess he was sympathetic because he also had a lot of discrimination against him too, and he had to work a lot, and
mm-hmm.
and so he was sympathetic to me, I guess, because I worked, and his wife is, in fact, I know his wife very well now. She's a member of the Chinese Women's Club that I am a member of, and so I guess he was sympathetic,
uh-huh.
to, because of his condition, he had a lot of discrimination too.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. That's the reason why him wanted to help Chinese more, because of the discrimination cases.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Yeah. And he would, did, at that time, did he still try very hard to fight a lot of the discriminatory cases?
No, I don't think he did. Well, I guess he did in a way, but he didn't actively talk about his
that. I see. Did he travel to say, you know, like I read something about him, and he also wrote history about CACN, and he
mm-hmm.
fought with the discrimination laws,
mm-hmm.
and he would go to Washington, D.C., and when those were happening, were you sort of aware of it, or?
Well, I wasn't until I was in his office and worked a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the beginning, you just do what's there, you don't think too much about what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
but I did. And I learned a lot about discrimination and what one could do and what one could not do and
mm-hmm.
what one could do by being more diplomatic and so on.
Uh-huh. Can you talk more about that? You know, like how can one do? And
actually, I don't know very much about it except that one should fight discrimination, but in a way that would you could get your way by doing, not being so aggressive, but at least aggressive in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
That I learned from him, that you could get things done by doing it in a soft way rather than a very hard way, another way, not getting out in the street and making a lot of noise, but you can also get your way by doing it in a softer and simpler way. That's what I learned from him.
Such as what would be considered softer and simple?
Well, getting your way, but in a more diplomatic way, to make the other person think that he's doing it for you when you're directing him toward learning how to do that.
I see. So, since you work in his office, you would think that the law, or you go through the legal way.
Well, that would be the way too, by a legal way, in getting your way in that way, that,
uh-huh.
and then helping the person to think that he had thought about doing that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I see. How long did you work for him?
Just I think maybe a couple of years.
Oh, I see. How did you get that job? Because also he.
I guess. Luck, I guess.
at that time, you just whenever there are
opportunity.
Uh-huh. And after that, where did you work? 2 years later.
Oh, then I got married.
Oh, you got married. And after you got married, you didn't work.
I did work for a while. Like, and then I became pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I carried the baby for a few months until. It became so obvious that I was pregnant, and I quit.
Uh-huh. Why did you just? I thought it would be nature that you just stay home and take care of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And did you think about?
Well, I thought about my going back to work again, but I going back to work after the baby arrived, but I didn't. I might have worked a while afterwards,
uh-huh.
and I did help
uh-huh.
help them get some of their things together. You know. But I didn't actively work.
I see. Wow, did you help Tarleton in any way in his work?
Well, at that time, I guess I did. I don't know, not too much.
You're being too humble. Yeah, so can you talk about your family, your own family here now? I mean, after you get married, and how many children do you have?
We have three children. We have three daughters, and they're very... I think one thing, sort of, because I worked, I just felt that they should also all become independent, so that they wouldn't have to depend on somebody to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, you know, which in a way, I guess maybe I should encourage them to marry a rich man or something, but I didn't. Well, I hear that Zsa Zsa Gabor does that.
So from a very young age, you taught them how to become independent.
Yes, and I always told them that. I hope they're still working. So.
Oh, they're working. Great, yeah. And so you stay home and brought up three girls,
mm-hmm.
and you never thought of getting back to work anymore?
Well, I have. In fact, I am now licensed acupressure. What do you call it? I give acupressure treatments.
Oh, is that right? When did you get the license?
I've had it for over 10 years.
I see. How did you get into that field?
We were eating lunch in a health food store, and I was sitting next to a lady, and it turned out to be the waitress, and she said, are you Japanese? And I said, no, I'm Chinese. So she said, the reason I asked, because I go to this Japanese lady for treatments every day, and because I'm a waitress, my feet hurt. And so I said, shoot, who do you go to? And she said, you should go to this lady. She's very good. And she gave me the name of this lady who turned out to be my teacher. She turned out to be a Japanese lady who knew how to do acupressure, a certain type of acupressure.
Uh-huh.
And I went to her, and she found my, right away she knew where I had a backache, and she took care of me. And then we got talking, and she was saying, you know, I give treatments, I teach the lesson also, so it would be good to help your family. So I said, oh yeah, I'd like to learn. So then I went to her and for a couple of years, and I went to her classes and so on. So then when I felt, gee, I'm really good. But then you have to have people to practice on.
Yeah.
So then I would tell my friends, I'd say, come on, let me give you a treatment so I can practice. So I did. And then it worked pretty well. And they would say, well, then my teacher said, well, you should charge them something. And I said, no, I can't do that. But then people would give me money or they'd bring me presents. And I said, no, don't do that. And then I said, well, you can, if you want to, you can give me $2 or something like that. Then it turned out, pretty soon I get calls from other people and say, you know, I'm a friend of so-and-so, and she said, you have treatments, and
really?
Then I would have strangers, and I said, well, I couldn't do that, so then I started charging, and then, so that's what I do now on the side.
That's nice.
But it keeps me busy.
Yeah, that's great, so. That was, when did your children leaving home, be on their own, your daughters?
Let me see. She took a long time to get them to leave home. Well, I mean, I don't mind that they came home, but I had to see my older daughter off to teach at school.
Uh-huh.
And she's married and has two boys.
Uh-huh.
And one about ready to go to UCLA, too.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Actually, so you wait until they all grown up and stay down there, and then you have time to think about what you like to do and all you can do.
Well, I thought of other things to do, and I ended up I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, aside from staying home and taking care of the family, what else did you do? Did you get involved in the community?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can you talk about your community
activities? I did a lot of. Community work for the American Cancer Society, and I used to, working for them is mainly going door to door and asking for funds. So I did raise a lot of funds for the American Cancer Society. And
when did you start doing that?
After the kids were older.
Uh huh.
About, I guess I started doing it about 10 years ago.
Uh huh. I see.
And I was a bluebird leader for, when my children were small. For all of them I did.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for the Campfire Girls for until they got out of campfire.
Oh, right. So you get involved a lot of, PTA things?
Yeah, PTA. I was active in PTA and raising funds for
school.
Different organizations.
So since you live in Sunland very early days, right? So your activity is mostly involving
in Sunland.
American Sunland community.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how did people feel about having Chinese?
They didn't think they were glad to have somebody come. Anybody who would come and for things, for volunteer work, they're glad to have anybody. It doesn't matter what nationality. It doesn't seem to anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very happy to have me. collect money for any of these organizations. Mm-hmm. So they keep calling me and asking me to do this and that.
Mm-hmm. So you get involved with, like, say, school community,
mm-hmm.
when your children start going to mm-hmm. school, and then they all come going to the local school then.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And how about the churches? Did you go to church here?
Yes, I went to one. I used to be very active in the Chinese, Shadow Hills, this area is called Shadow Hills,
mm-hmm.
the Shadow Hills Presbyterian
mm-hmm.
Church,
mm-hmm.
and all our children went there,
mm-hmm.
and although I'm not active there now, but I used to.
Mm-hmm. So, dude, that's probably back to like the 40s you started. When did you move to here?
In the 40s, I guess.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the places you live?
Well, when we lived in Los Angeles, we rented a place and we lived there for a long time until.
Where was it then?
In the same community where we used to live in the Hollywood area, Hollywood near Melrose and Vermont area.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And we lived in that area for a long time until. Until 19, gee, I can't remember the date, but anyway, until our children were, my youngest child at that time when we moved here, she was just a little over a year, so
mm-hmm.
we've been here a long time.
Oh, I see. So, in the Hollywood area, the reason why you stayed there in the house there was because of Tyra's work or what?
Well, because it was cheap.
Uh-huh. And was it easy to get the place there, or
well,
at that time the neighborhood was what kind of a neighborhood?
Kind of a mixed neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and it was like you're always conscious that you have to be careful when you're, you know, renting. That you, I don't know how we got it in the first place. I know how we got it in the first place. A friend was living across the where we rented finally. Lived across the street, and he found the place for us,
mm-hmm.
who was a Caucasian friend,
mm-hmm.
and he found the place, and then the place that we rented, and I think most of my friends, our friends rather, find places that way, because through other friends, you know, other Caucasian friends would find a place and say, give them a nice build up and say, oh, these are good, honest people, and so that's how most of us got our places, I think. How did you find your place?
The time is different. I
yes.
Guess. And then when you moved to here, why did you decide to pick up this place? And
well, at that time. At that time, Tyrus was working in the studios, and his friend said that we were looking for a place because our youngest, by that time, was over just a year old, so we needed a place.
Mm-hmm.
So he told us about this place, and so. That's how we happened to find it, just through other friends.
Uh-huh, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. And at that time, did you have difficulty purchasing it?
Well, no, not really. Not because our friend happened to be a real estate agent, and he, I guess, gave us a nice build-up. And in fact, I guess, not come to think of it, when we decided to buy this place, the people that were here, that she told me that she went around all the neighborhood to tell the people that we were going to buy this place, and she went and asked everybody if they were against having Chinese here. So she was sort of advance. She went around in advance and to probe the media and see if everything, you know. And she said she didn't. Everybody seemed to be very, very agreeable to having us here. So. So I guess it made it very easy for us.
Did you hear other friends have difficult times
yes,
with
mm-hmm.
the housing,
yes,
so you were
yes.
sort of very cautious about?
Yes,
uh-huh.
because of some very good friends of ours have a shop in did have a shop in Montrose, which is a little town near here, and she said that they had such difficulty, and they finally went to the church that they were active in. Came and stayed in the place to keep other people away because they were going to. No, I guess they weren't allowed to. Didn't want them to live there, and so
mm-hmm.
because of the church, they were able to
mm-hmm.
stay in their house. So we didn't have that difficulty because this other lady that went around the neighborhood and to see if it would be okay if we lived here. And I hadn't thought of it being difficult, but anyway, it was made easy for us in that way.
I see. So after you move in, did you have chance to interact with the neighbors and at the beginning?
I made sure that we all, the children all went to the church. Because we discovered church people are very more, you know, in order to be more Christian, I guess, you have to be more open to other people. So they seemed to be all right. And our children had no difficulties in church. So
that's how you established the relationship with the vocation.
Through the church mainly. And then, of course, afterward, then I was active in the community things like I said, you know, Campfire Girls and American Cancer and every, you know, all these places we had to run and get funds, things that some people didn't want to do.
Yeah, how about the Chinese community activities at the beginning? You know, you mentioned about Chinese Women's Club, and when did you join them?
Well, my friend Florence was a member, and she introduced me to them, and they seemed to want me to join, and so that's how.
Can you talk to us about the function of the clubs and the, who are they, you know, who are the members? And
well, Mrs. Hong, the wife of my former employer, is a member, and the other members are, let's see, Judge Liu, I don't know. Quite a few. Who were the members then?
Yeah, I mean, and who decided to form this club, or when you went in, it's already formed?
It was already formed.
Is Mrs. Kwan was the one of the founders?
She was one of the founders, and Mrs. Kwan, you know, well, she has now passed away.
Mrs.
Kwan.
What's
her name? Was Lily Kwan at that time.
Albert Kwan. Albert Kwan.
His present wife now also named Lily. But at that time, his first wife was also named Lily Kwan, was the founder, actually, I think, one of the founders.
What was the purpose of having the Chinese Women's Club? The name was Chinese Women's Club?
Yes, and they federated with the American Federation of Women's Clubs, and they mainly to promote friendship among Chinese community and the American community. That was a primary reason, I think.
Were you the member when you were working for Mr. Hong?
No, I wasn't. No.
There was formed afterwards.
I think so.
I see.
I think that was formed at least 10 years before I joined.
Oh, I see. What year did you join? You were still in Chinatown then at that time. I mean, in the area. Or you already moved?
I was already married and moved away from Chinatown.
I see. So, what kind of activities do they have, the women's club?
Well, mostly the women's club. Well, mainly to raise scholarships, and that is to raise funds for high school students. In fact, I think when I became a member, that was the reason that one of the reasons I joined is I thought it would be nice to raise funds of scholarships for Chinese high school students so they could get a little money to start. And that's one of the reasons. Well, that's a problem. I'm the editor of the cookbook.
Oh, yes, right. Okay.
And
they publish the cookbook every year, or was just they published it a long time ago?
It was first published in the 1940s. And then we did so well with it that then we stopped for a long time. And we raised quite a lot of funds. And then this year we decided we would redo the whole cookbook, which is
You are the editor of this cookbook, right?
Yeah. We raised funds. This is the new section that just came out this year.
Oh, I see. You put a new edition and then...
Just that little kit edition.
Oak,
they just reprinted the old book.
And it's very popular. You have been very successful.
Yes, it's been very successful. In fact, it's the reason we decided to reprint again, because we had many people would write and ask us for copies of the book, and we didn't have any more. We'd sold out, in fact. So we thought, well, we'll just reprint again. And our printers did well because we had a little publicity last month, I think. Did you see it in the paper?
Yes.
No, so because of that, we got a lot of mail orders. I got a lot of mail orders.
Gee, are you taking care of that too?
No, I'm not. Thank God. Well, we have another member takes care of that. But I still edit the book.
How many members do you have, and did you have at the time?
At that time, I think it was very active. When I first joined, it was much more active, a lot more members. But now we have active about 100 members.
Oh, that's still a pretty good group. Mm-hmm. And that time when you joined, was that close to World War II at that time? Or was it before?
When I joined, it was past already.
Past World War II, I see. And the members still keeping.
Yeah, they still
stable.
Go.
Great.
Sure. Because at that time Mrs. Kwan and Mrs. Hong were very much more active then.
So, how often did you have to meet?
We meet once a month.
Mm-hmm. And did you feel that you go to the meeting at that time when you joined, your children were still small?
Well, my children were pretty well, not too small.
So you were able to
have a lot of activity then. Running around a lot.
So mainly your community activity is first when you have children, you concentrate with your children's school activities, church activities, and then after the children grown up a little bit more, and then you go into more community, not related to the children's activities.
When I had the children, I was quite active in the community then, in the school.
The school related.
I
see. But then after the children grown up, and then you start non-school, community activities.
That's right.
What other Chinese organization you participate in?
Only mainly for Chinese organization, mainly the Chinese Women's Club and this.
Chinese Historical Society.
Who did all this anyway?
Yeah, that's George.
Oh.
Yeah, And so, we're talking about the program of March meeting, I believe. Yeah, George did the program.
The George who is, I don't know.
George E.
Oh.
The one of, he was the president.
Oh, George E. Oh,
George
sure.
E. Yeah, right. And that's because we were recording, so I thought. Yeah, and then did you belong to any family organization?
No, I don't.
How about you? Paris.
Neither does Paris. He doesn't want to join any organization.
So mainly you were just society and how about Tyrus? Did he belong to any like artist organization?
He belongs to he belongs to several artist organizations, but he's not active. But he does belong to Chinese the American Watercolor Society, California Watercolor Society, and which are national organizations. So.
Mm-hmm. Did he have to go to many functions?
No, he doesn't go. He belongs, but he doesn't go.
So you didn't have to go with him with all these activities. So how do you feel about being able to contribute yourself to these community activities? Why you decide to be so involved and as a volunteer?
Well, especially when my friend when they lived in La Crescenta and had such a difficult time in their house, I said, we just have to get busy in the American community and to show people that Chinese aren't that difficult to live with or live next door to. So I decided I encourage my children to take part in all kinds of activities, although some of them do and some of them don't.
I see. And would your children experience the same thing as you did before, say, in high school? That would they dream of, become a member of sororities or something?
No.
More activities that the American Caucasian girls would dream of?
No, I think less. They don't take part in those activities either, although they can take part, but they don't.
They have the opportunity.
They have the opportunity.
They have better opportunity than you did.
Mm-hmm.
Would you also tell them about, what would you tell your daughters, you know, when they were growing up, being a Chinese?
Well, I just have to keep reminding them that they're Chinese, because they, when you live in this community, in this kind of a community where everybody's there and they just never think of being anything else, just that they just think other their friends seem to think of them as just as they are. So I just have to keep reminding them that they're Chinese, and you know, you have to be better, and you have to do certain things, and ignore certain things.
Yeah, they never complained about being mistreated, or
they didn't seem to. They might have, but I didn't. They didn't feel that they were. In fact, one of my daughters said, "I have to look in the mirror and tell myself that I'm Chinese, because she just thinks of herself as just the rest of them."
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.